Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lee.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos
and talk about it.
We talk about everything. We talk about the art. We talk about the film. We talk about the writing.
The quality of the curing of the meat.
I mean, it really is the only Sopranos podcast out there. Please do not look into other Sopranos podcasts. They do not exist. There's only one, Highlander. Anyways, I'm very excited about this episode, Vince, because this episode, we're getting a guest straight from Sopranos Twitter.
Oh,
this
what?
Guy. Yes, there is a
come again.
There is a sub. There's like a subculture of Twitter called Sopranos Twitter. That is just a bunch of memes and Sopranos centric posts.
I love memes.
I love memes, dude. They fucking rule. And this guy is a certified Sopranos expert. You've heard him on Fisked Pod. F-S-C-K-D. Fisked Pod. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Jay Gordon. How you doing,
hey,
Jay?
How you doing today? Thanks for having me. I love that the best thing about The Sopranos is it's a television show about a bunch of people from New Jersey
that
don't feel appreciated.
Yeah.
That's the whole fucking show.
Yeah.
Nobody. If you really think about almost any character in the entire program, the whole almost entire arc of their character is somehow or another they don't feel appreciated. And it is nearly every major character in the show. And it makes me feel a lot about where we are right now in 2020.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the reasons why in this whole fucking rewatch culture in quarantine, people gravitated so much to The Sopranos because I think we're really in a portion of the world, I should say in history, where feeling not appreciated is a part of our culture.
If you're
I've always felt underappreciated, you know?
Well, if you're part of a white, like ethnic white subset of the American experience, 2020, you're feeling more underappreciated than ever. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, you know, every day it's like they got the Asians and the blacks and they got all these. What about us? When are we going to get worse? I'm sorry.
And you know, that's what's so great about the episode we're going to talk about today, because that's so much a part of this episode is that someone who doesn't feel appreciated asserts kind of his privilege and ability upon another person.
Oh, for sure.
Who is not just underappreciated, but is actually systemically made to be a lesser human being in even in his own job.
Yeah, I mean,
no, you went deep on theme immediately. You're like, I mean, right off the bat, you did like some homework. It's great.
Yeah, most of our guests don't even watch the episode. They just pretend.
I really love this particular episode, and I think it's because the episode in itself is about Junior's cancer. That's that's the entire episode in a nutshell. You don't need to think about it in almost anything. Everything that else happens is just about how you get to the thing of Junior recognizing that his cancer is real.
And it's also like most Sopranos episodes about titties and meat, and to me those are the most important things that the Sopranos has to teach us as a culture, that you know, titties are awesome to look at. And there's all different types of meat that you can eat.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, Tony's cool, bro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tony's cool as fuck. He's like one of the coolest guys. So you are in Brooklyn right now?
I am.
Is that where are you from?
I grew up on Staten Island.
Oh, okay. So you're a native East Coast guy.
Yeah, yeah. And so
I think that's the most Italian place to be from, isn't it? Staten Island, other than Italy.
Other than Italy.
As you know, and that's funny. Like as a Jewish American growing up in a primarily Italian American southern portion of Staten Island, the reason why this show was always so like familiar to me is that, like, you know, growing up in like the New York City area, especially around the people I did, that, you know, from like the Jewish part of my family, and then mm-hmm. the people who were married in, and some like my cousins and aunts that were Italian. You know, I learned a lot about how in the end we're kind of the same, you know, like
Jews and Italians,
very, very much the same. Whereas we feels both the have same. This,
I feel it, like
it's this same.
I feel like we're literary foils. Cause like, you know, we both envy, like there's certain attributes that I feel like Jews don't have as much and envy in Italians and vice versa. Like we're always, right,
I'm calling the ADL, but go on.
Yeah. I mean,
what do Jews not have?
I think Italians, well, I don't know, speaking for myself, I feel like Italians envy the like the more intellectual. I feel like Jews are a little more intellectual, and Italians are always sort of envious of that. And Italians,
oh, that's true, dude. I'm hella smart.
And Italians are a little more meat-heady, which I feel like Jews, you know, they might envy that quality, I mean, a little bit. But we both have like the same. Like you said, the same like grievance, same grievances and guilt.
It really does begin with that. For most of us who are like, you know, maybe second generation, like post World War II, for both, you know, Jews and Italians, we have this very kind of like rooted in grievance why we're here in the fucking first place, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, fucking Mussolini, fucking Hitler. This is why we're here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you think about that. And it's so funny to think about the TV show Golden Girls. Because literally, like, they made those jokes back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like her grandmother leaving Palermo. And, mm-hmm. you know, and like, I guess having an affair with Mussolini or, you know,
it's a great show. I literally watched it last night.
Well, before we get too deep into the episode, play the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
I love the effort you fucking put into that.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. That took me weeks, you know. it took a few days just mapping out the concept, you know, using a dry erase board. Then I got a focus group together and I was like, what should we do with this theme song?
And breakout eventually, sessions, it was great.
Yeah, it really, you know,
it's like how Defiler did, you know, it sounds like that. That was their fucking process.
Yeah, that was definitely. Yeah, in order to write that theme song, I had to be electrocuted first and then get clean, which I believe, isn't that how Defiler, isn't that what happened with them?
There's a lot, I think there was heroin involved.
Yes, yes, yes.
There was coke and heroin involved in the Defiler story.
Oh,
led
God.
To, what is it, something day? Visiting day.
Visiting day. Thank you, Defiler. All right. So today, like we said before, or actually, I don't know if we said it. Today, we're going to be talking about season 3, episode 5 of The Sopranos, Another Toothpick, which premiered March 25th, 2001. Vince, what was the synopsis of this episode?
Bobby Bacala Bacalieri Sr., comes out of retirement to deal with a young hothead named Mustang Sally, much to the chagrin of his son and Uncle Junior.
Yeah, that's a synopsis. So it premiered March 25th, 2001. And you know what? I think that means that we need to take a little trip back to know what was going on in America.
That's
when
right.
This episode came out.
That's right, Matt. You need to know, you can't separate any art from its cultural context. And
absolutely.
You know, we need to know what was happening in society. What was the zeitgeist? Where were we at on March 25th? 2001, and that's why we go to the Remember When.
Walk, teddy daddy, bop, bop, shoe, bop. Remember then.
Remember.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
All right.
That's right. So March 25th, 2001, some of the headlines that were happening, no more free birthday cake at Goldman Sachs was a story in the New York Post. Goldman Sachs CEO Hank Paulson could be singing It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To on his birthday this week, but he'll do it without making a wish and blowing out the candles unless his minions chip in to buy the cake for him out of their own pockets.
What the fuck? This is a story?
Yeah.
Insiders, how is this a story?
This is the best part. Insiders at the White Shoe Investment Bank said there's a buzz about no more free birthday cakes as part of a company-wide cost-cutting effort. And then the only person they quote is a Goldman Sachs spokesperson who says the story is nonsense. So, you know, great job, Post.
That is so fucking weird.
But, you know, it's after the dot-com bubble burst.
That's like inner office drama, though.
Yeah.
Man, that was when my career started, was when that dot-com bubble burst, because young schmucks like me would work for fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Another thing, that was the year that the WWF bought the WCW. That March 2001.
A watershed event.
Look, in 2001, you know, I had a weird girlfriend kind of at the time.
Who didn't
before
in 2001?
I didn't. I was in high school.
And the one thing that she wasn't really interested in is when me and like my family would watch pro wrestling together. And like this was like a huge moment in like 2000s, late 90s culture.
Is that what made her weird? Was it that she didn't want to watch wrestling?
No, she was just fucking weird in general.
Oh, okay.
But like the thing, like, she had this weird thing that she really, really did not like that I liked pro wrestling. She was really upset with it. She's like, this is such a waste of time. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever it is. I'll fucking live with it.
That was like when we found out what's-his-face was going to be directing both Star Trek and Star Wars movies in the same year. J.J. Abrams.
Oh, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Too much. Not fair.
Also,
not cool,
not
bro.
Not a good director. Also, other things that happened March 25th. Not too many notable deaths, but we had Brian Trubshaw, a British test pilot who was the first person to fly the Concorde, dead at age 77.
Fascinating news that item, Vince.
You know, it's kind of lame that we don't have, we had a supersonic airline and now we don't have it anymore. It's kind of
lame. Because it blew up.
I stand a high-flying king.
Dude,
listen, yeah, out, dude. Samesies.
Look,
like,
it blew up a couple of times. You could get from New York to London in 3 hours, though. That's amazing.
Honestly,
with the miles I got right now,
yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
If I could use these miles, yo, United, pop that Concorde back in. I could do here. I'm not going to London now.
Jesus. I'm just saying, just because like a couple hundred like British bitches died.
Look,
you know?
Some of us want to roll the fucking dice and get there quick.
Some of
you
us
know
are
saying?
Ready to die, bro. Born ready. Yo.
I want to Brexit my ass supersonic. Shut the fuck up and let me fly.
The top movies in the country on this weekend were Heartbreakers. That was with Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that movie.
Boy. I liked Jennifer Love Hewitt back in the day. I'm not going to lie.
2001 Sigourney also.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Ooh. Yeah. They're both kind of at their peak.
Yeah. Number two movie was The Brothers. I think that was one of the first black rom-coms starring Morris Chestnut, D.L. Hughley, and Bill Bellamy. I feel like they're all those three are always in the same movies together for whatever reason. Yeah. Number three movie was a holdover from last week, Exit Wounds, with Steven Seagal and DMX.
Hell yeah. Oof.
Top song. I'm a little disappointed that it knocked Butterfly by Crazy Town out of the top slot.
That sucks.
Top song. I'm hoping it's going to come back in future.
Me too.
But the top song was Angel by Shaggy, which pretty solid jam. I'm sorry.
Solid jam. Yeah. Solid jam.
Angel.
I don't even care what Shaggy's saying. I'm going to listen. I like it.
Yeah,
and you know, it's like what's great is he's just kind of like, "Hey, my God, hey, it's me, Shaggy." Or like that's the great thing about
it's just like Jamaican Gollum.
It's just like all of a sudden he's just like, "Hey, it's me." It's like, "Oh, I'm gonna let's go to my concert." Like, it's the way it is.
God,
Shaggy, want the precious. Shaggy, want the precious. All right. Well, that was what was going on March 25th, 2001. A lot of great things happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's get into the episode. So, like you said, this is the episode where we meet Bobby Bacala's dad for the first time and the last time, unfortunately.
Burt Young, great. Fantastic work in this episode.
Great.
Fucking
perfect
Paulie.
Coughing. Like the coughing, honestly, at this point, I'm just trained now since coronavirus to fear coughing. And so I was uncomfortable most of the episode every time he was on screen because I just wanted to clear his lungs out for him. But he was great. So I have some Bada B stories real quick just to sum up all of the, you know, plot points of the episode. All right, here we go.
Hold on.
Bada B story.
If these don't rhyme, I'm fucking leaving this podcast.
Dude, you know that they're going to rhyme.
Okay, good. All right.
The question is,
I know how to produce a podcast. I'll
yeah.
Just tell you,
man. You know, like, we understand. Oh, I see. He's trying to take my spot. Fuck you, bro. So, Bada B stories real quick. Mustang Sally thinks he better slow his Mustang down. Bobby's daddy thinks he better mow his godson down. Tony Soprano accidentally demotes a cop who's brown. Uncle Junior reaping what he sows, he wears a frown. Hairpiece Ralphie is kind of mad that Gigi stole his crown. And finally, Artie Bucco breaks up with his wife and wears an earring now. All he wants to do is ride Adriana. Come on, what is that? Ride.
I didn't see the cue. Sorry, man.
Ride, Artie, ride. God damn it, you guys.
It was
mother.
Good. Oh. It was good.
All she wants to do is dance.
Yeah, no.
it kind of sounded like you're going in that.
No,
yeah.
I'm doing. Listen, I'm not a great singer, but I think I did a pretty good job. All right. So let's get into this episode, shall we? This episode opens with Carmela and Tony Soprano at therapy.
First, Carmela's first, her first therapy sesh.
And pretty great, I have to say. It's something we've been waiting for, I think, for a while on this show, which is like someone else other than the audience, other than us, to witness what goes on in therapy. And they did a really good job of kind of showing the reality of what happens when you're like, you know, when your one-on-one sessions are viewed by another person in which you completely change your personality and are like, actually,
Jesus Christ.
I'm super together.
My therapist once asked, well, do you want to bring your wife into therapy once?
And oh, yeah.
Like, I thought about it. And it's like, No, that's cool. We'll stay on this fucking track. We'll let her work her shit out. I'll stay here.
Yeah, I had a therapist when I lived in San Francisco for a while that I was so covetous of that I struggled to give anyone his name. That's like how much I was like, because he was doing such a good job with me that like other comedians would be like, oh, I hear there's like this really great therapist that you see who like sees a lot of comedians. I'd be like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Stay away from Dino, because Dino changed
for me,
my life.
It was more, I look at more like a separation of powers.
Sure.
Like in a relationship for me, like what, like, and so there are things that I believe. Yeah. Yeah. If I wanted to do some sort of couples therapy, yeah, I probably would, but in
get
the,
a different
the
therapist. Context. That's what I would yeah. do. If I want to do couples therapy, get a different therapist, someone with a yeah. clean slate, because the last thing I want is my therapist to start revealing shit that I've talked about for years with them to mm-hmm. my significant other. Because
yeah.
that's,
no,
let's
they're
be
in,
honest.
They're in the circle
that's what
of
you
trust.
Do in therapy.
They're supposed to take that to yeah. the grave.
Well, but, you know, we both have kind of like, my wife and I have this kind of established because she's wife. Got her own things.
Sorry.
You stick with your thing. I stick with my thing.
Right.
It's cool.
Yeah. And I think that's healthy. But they do have this great moment in therapy where Carmela, because I guess she's unfamiliar with what it's like to have like an open and honest conversation around relationship troubles, immediately takes offense at the line of questioning that that Dr. Melfi has posed to her. And I have a clip of that.
Yeah, they could have been a little bit nicer to each other, I feel like.
I thought they were plenty nice.
Like maybe you do things, you know, that have some effect on me.
Oh, really?
What? People affect each other in life.
Oh, I get it. Is this how it works? You can't get any answers out of him, so you start looking for someone else to point the finger at?
She's not saying anything. Why are you getting so defensive?
Maybe you should explore your own behavior. Maybe you pass out because you're guilty over something. Maybe the fact that you stick your dick into anything with a pulse, you ever thought of exploring that as a root cause?
Very nice. That's very nice.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's like people who smoke their whole lives and then they sue the cigarette companies when they get cancer.
You know, you agreed
it's,
to come
really,
here.
It's really one of my favorite Carmela lines. Stick your dick in. I'm a moron and I take notes. And mm-hmm. there's two things in that scene that like there's a few things in the scene that I read. Before you get to that whole kind of rant mm-hmm. between the two of them, it's really silent in the room and all of a sudden you hear, whoa. Just a stomach.
Oh,
growl.
Yeah. That is.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's
yeah,
call.
There is. They mic'd a stomach growl, which was. It was so perfect that I thought it was mm-hmm. my stomach. It was.
They intentionally. You know what yeah. I mean? Like,
yeah.
Fucking ridiculous.
Right. Just sit there. Silence. Anger. And then you pass out and you blame the rest of the fucking world.
Yeah, I love you too.
You're both very angry.
Yeah, you must have been at the top of your fucking class.
Such a good line. I mean, that's such
it's totally
such a perfect button for that scene.
It really is. And I, you know, that is another thing that I appreciate about when they're doing the therapy right on The Sopranos. It's they end before they have to analyze the button of the scene. You know what I mean? Because
it
very easily
you don't want them to break down the button of the scene. It's like,
no,
right,
you don't want
them
to break it down.
You hit it hard and move on.
Move on. Exactly. It's very nice. Yeah. So then immediately following that scene, Tony gets pulled over by a black cop. And that is kind of Tony's storyline for this episode, is him dealing with not just like, you know, being pulled over by a black cop, but also just his intense racism for black people in general. Mm-hmm. It is definitely, it's kind of weird because you see him, he gets pulled over. He's doing whatever he can to like, let this black cop know, you know, I could hurt your career. And the cop isn't having it at all.
Well,
and
Tony breaks the first rule of bribes there. And the first rule of dealing with cops is that you're supposed to be nice and not like, you don't immediately go into, hey, buddy, my fucking taxes pay your salary. He immediately goes into like expecting stuff for him.
It's because he's racist. It's because he's more offended that he was pulled over by a black cop than he was if it had been a white cop. I think he is, and he's also a little raw from therapy, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
He had a good session.
And Charles S. Dutton, you know, as Leon, is so. Charles S. Dutton has a way of playing these very like, I'm being nice because I have to kind of characters. And it was a very like cultural specific kind of role he was playing.
Yeah.
In all moments in the episode, Charles S. Dutton is interacting with Tony. He has to be cool.
Yeah. He plays it cool throughout in a way that's, it's impressive, and it also kind of like you end up using it a little bit as evidence when Assemblyman Zellman says that everyone hates him and they think he has mental problems. It's a weird thing because, you know, as soon as he says that, you're like, yeah, he was abnormally calm when he talked to Tony. He must be mentally ill. Like that was a thought that I had.
It to me, it really was indicative of just like, I think what it really comes down to is not really understanding what you as like a white person are inflicting on a person and that is intentionally having to be nice because of what they do. And then when you include their race into the kind of conversation, and they have to continue to be nice.
Right.
It is their job.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't want to lose the job at the you know, whatever, the birdbath factory or wherever he works.
Well, yeah, first of all, it's Fountains of Wayne. Don't get it straight. And that's a very historic lawn ornament store, which of course also provided the name for Fountains of Wayne, RIP. As a real store, I had to look it up. I was like, wait, being from the West Coast, I was like, wait, is Fountains of Wayne a real place, or did the band get that from the show? But no, it's a real place, and it actually shut down in 2009.
Okay, so well that ruins my alternate title for this episode, which was ACAB, All Cops Are Birdbath Salesmen. So I guess I'll have to change it.
I lived in that like North area Jersey for a while, so I did remember I was in Jersey City around this time, and I remember, or maybe a little after, and I remember when thinking of that whole Fountains of Wayne, and I looked it up, and of course there it is in fucking Wayne, New Jersey.
Oh, that makes sense. See, if I had known it was in Wayne, I would understand the title completely.
I like that. It reminds me of that SNL sketch with the marble columns where it was just like Scarlett Johansson and Fred Armisen, where they're like, you gotta get yourself some marble columns. It's just like a weird, like a one of those places that just sells tacky things. You gotta love that.
It's basically a Spencer's Gifts for adults is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, you can get yourself some gnomes, some fountains,
and a kid pissing.
You can get yourself a kid pissing. You know, if you're Portuguese, you can get like the Virgin Mary. She's I don't know why Portuguese people always have fucking like a statue of the Virgin Mary in their yard.
Is that specific to Portuguese people?
I lived on a street with like a bunch of Portuguese people in San Diego, and they all had like Virgin Mary like shrines in the yard, which I thought was
you don't think about the Portuguese that much anymore. You know what I mean?
There's
a huge,
what are they doing?
There's a huge Portuguese community in the New England area, specifically Maine. Huh. They're very, very much part of the seafood acquisition industry.
It's strange. It just, you know what it is?
I watch a lot of fucking documentaries. A lot of Anthony Bourdain.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's, I think the reason we don't talk about Portuguese anymore is that the language sucks. It sounds like it's a deaf Frenchman trying to speak Spanish. You know what I mean?
It is only vowels. It's funny. They have like two consonants. It's great.
Yeah, but when you get to Brazil, you get all these like pretty ladies who speak it. So
yeah, but they speak like deaf Frenchmen speaking Spanish. It's just like, you know, it's like that's what ruins it. It's just like, so close. Anyways, it's a great country. Did you know it's in Europe? Okay, moving on. In terms of like what's our favorite and least favorite, the only moment I don't like is when he calls Councilman Assemblyman Zellman. First he calls him to be like, this guy fucked with me. And then Zelman gets this dude basically demoted, and he is no longer out on the street. Now he has to work a second job because he's not allowed to get overtime. And Tony feels bad. And to
that
me,
that made sense to me.
I mean, it made sense, but I also was like,
it doesn't go back to what Carmella said.
What did Carmella say?
She said, maybe it's because you feel guilty. You know, the things that, I mean, literally, and
that's true. No, you're right.
I mean, he was thinking about him. Back, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, that's what the whole episodes tend to be.
Yeah.
You learn about what the rest of the episode is going to be in the Melfi scenes.
Yeah. But
I'm sorry to be so deep about it. Just saying, like, you saw this coming from what you saw in the Melfi portion.
No,
I would
for
say
sure.
Even from on a shallower level, like, Tony is doing what you do when you get a ticket. You're looking out for number one. You want the ticket to go away. But then when he realizes that, like, there's consequences to another human of his ticket going away, he feels bad, which I feel like is a natural feeling. He's like, I just called you to get rid of the ticket. Like, I didn't call you, like, so that... And I feel like people get shit from their jobs for reasons that are very similar. Like, someone just wants a problem fixed, but that turns into someone right. getting punished for it.
Yeah, I know, but when he shows up at Fountains of Wayne to look for a part for his bird bag.
Check out Stacy's mom and get a
to
red
check
dragon
out Stacy's
tattoo.
Mom just to see if she's got it going on. Uh-huh. And he runs into him, and he's immediately giving him shit for working there. He's immediately yeah, like giving him shit. So
hey,
it's not
chef.
Like
he goes literally, hey, chef.
He calls him chef. He calls him Shaft, and
ask
you know
him if he's working undercover.
Yeah, and then you know if he's gonna write a ticket to a naked fountain and shit like that. He is giving him shit. He doesn't give a shit about this dude's socioeconomic status. That's for fucking sure.
You definitely don't. Also, you don't want to do that to fucking Charles S. Dutton. He killed the guy in a knife fight. Like that's that guy's seen some shit. He's been to prison. You don't want to fuck with that guy.
Well, you know, he I guess he didn't know, but I think it just to me. I don't know. It was like I could see a normal person being like, oh, I didn't know I took away your overtime, you know, but I couldn't really see. I mean, Tony can be empathetic, but anyways, that all kind of goes away the moment that that Meadow shows up back into the story and reveals that she had her bike stolen by a black guy. And that triggers Tony's racism to a point where he completely forgets about giving a shit about this cop. And I have a clip from that.
Well, don't you think they should know they have a thief preying on the school?
What are you talking about?
Nothing. Her bike was stolen from outside the library 2 weeks ago.
The 10 speed?
Some black guy from the neighborhood. One of the other kids saw him. What?
Did I say anything? Black guy. Imagine that.
Tony.
It's just, you know, I can't believe it.
I'm not listening to this shit.
Why don't you admit it? You're thinking exactly what I'm thinking.
Tony, what did I say?
What, is it my fault? You're twice as likely to be robbed by a black?
That is so fucking racist.
Happens to be a fact.
For your information, crime is an economic issue, not a racial one. White or African American, you're more likely to steal if you're in a lower income bracket, which most African Americans are.
Good, then you'll feel better when the next one takes your car stereo.
You are such a hypocrite.
This is what I've been trying to tell you all along. You stay with your own people.
But wait a second, where are you going with that lamp? I'm taking it.
You want that lamp?
She's a nasty woman for sure.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, she is such a like, a post-Hillary liberal.
Yes, yes.
The best way to kind of put what I look at, like adult Meadow. Like,
yeah. Like, she has a Twitter account that has like a still with her hashtag. Mm-hmm. You know,
her banner up the uh-huh. top. It's like Bill and Hillary and Tim Kaine and his wife. And
yeah.
DNC from 2016 with the
every
balloons.
Every other tweet is just a quote tweet that says, but her emails like
she's got memes with Nancy Pelosi in her fierce red
and
suit.
Yeah, just like, you know, Slay clapping and shit. Yeah.
She's been K-Hive since day one.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think about what Meadow Soprano would be doing now, and all I can think is like, oh man, she is she has a much more successful NPR podcast than we do. You know what I mean? like her shit is on NPR and she's just crushing it right now.
You know, it's funny. I adopted a dog and
nice.
And she had a really shitty name and I didn't like her name. And and
so I killed her.
No. So I was just like, no, I didn't kill her. Fuck that. No, I just went with like Meadow.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tony loves your dog. And Tony just wants your dog not to, you know, pal around with black dogs. That's all.
That's, you know what? You know who doesn't want people to pal around with anyone? Mustang fucking Sally.
Oh, yeah.
Which is I'm really good at segues.
Brilliant. Look at that. It's
a brilliant nickname. I feel like this is like the best nickname so far in The Sopranos is Mustang Sally. Because his name's Sal. Sure. He drives a Mustang. Mustang Sally. It's a solid name.
Absolutely.
Not a pussy. No pussy involved.
Yeah.
No fucking like salted fish. Like he has a Mustang and his name is Sal.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like Mustang Sally like describes his entire personality because he has the personality of everyone who drives a Mustang.
Yeah. Yeah. It is unfortunate. It's almost like it was like, you wonder how far back he's been called Mustang Sally. You wonder what came first, the Mustang or the nickname? Because like that nickname, if it came first, ruined his life. He could have been any other Sal, dude. Like but instead someone was like, oh, let's call him Mustang Sally, and immediately started smoking meth and hitting women. Like that's the unfortunate nature of that kind of nickname. Because I can't think of a more scumbag nickname for someone than Mustang Sally.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Also, like, this also brings us to we haven't done favorite yet, but we're doing favorite, least favorite. My least favorite part of this episode is the coma guy's incredibly fake scalp. Like, that whole first scene.
Yes.
Or that whole scene where, you know, she's talking to the guy who Mustang Sally's about
Vito's
to hit.
Vito's brother.
Yeah, Vito's brother.
Yeah, Vito's brother.
All I can focus on is his really fake scalp. And I wonder if, like, they needed his scalp to look like that so they could add the, like, head injury makeup to it.
I mean, I'm sure. I'm sure that's what they needed. It's funny. I didn't notice that it was a fake scalp. I just thought, like, that is a weird scalp. But now that I think about it, you're right. They just applied all of the makeup, you know, early so that they could be ready for the shot where they just hit him in the face with a putter. Was that a putter?
Yeah,
hit
that was with a putter. Right? Yeah, that's an old school like Titleist. What were those things called?
God.
I think it's called like an answer. I want to say no.
Knowing names of putters.
I had one of those at one point. They hit the ball.
You move to Fresno. You start playing golf.
I've been playing golf since I was 9. Man, come on.
Well, listen, knowing the names of putters, that's where I draw the line. You're too
Trump
classy
National
for me
putter
now.
School, you're heading out there on the links with the old man with the MAGA hats.
Think you're better than me.
You call them sticks is what you do.
I grew up next to a municipal golf course.
That's right. It's the only kind I ever played.
It's a good kind.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Yeah, so
one thing about the dude that Vito's brother, with before he gets brained.
Yeah, gets straight brained.
He asks for a Manhattan special.
I was going to ask about that. What is that?
So a Manhattan special is a coffee soda. It is a very, very specific. It's a very New York.
They have that?
Yeah, it is a coffee soda. It is unsweetened. It tastes like coffee, straight coffee. It has no sugar. It has no cream. It's just black coffee soda.
With bubbles? Is that the whole thing? I want my coffee to have bubbles?
Kind of sounds like a cold brew, kind of like a proto cold brew kind of thing.
I mean, it's a cold carbonated coffee.
Yeah. That's what they're trying to do with that nitro cold brew.
It is a very, very, we got a couple of kind of things that are just like synonymous with New York City, like the bacon, egg, and cheese.
Egg cream.
9/11.
The egg cream, it is a relic of time gone by. Nowadays, though, like a Manhattan special is a thing that's in a bottle, and it has been in a bottle for as long as I can remember. And you go anywhere in the five boroughs, you can get yourself a Manhattan special, including in Jersey, where it is just as popular, especially North Jersey, because it's just
that's the sixth borough.
I like I like that there's all these New York specialties where they just put soda in places that you wouldn't expect. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Can we talk about I don't want to shorten our discussion of Mustang Sally, but
oh please,
I love the storyline that Artie is in love with Adriana because it somehow turns Tony into like the unlikely relationship expert because I feel like his reaction to Artie falling in love with Adriana is at once like he's laughing at Artie because he's so cliche and pathetic, but he's also like so empathetic towards his friend, so empathetic towards his friend in a way. Also like pointing out that like you are a fucking idiot. You are every middle-aged man who falls in love with his employee.
Yeah, he's way over the top, and which is the whole super theme out of line.
Artie every time.
I know.
Every time a woman is in that, he looks at them and goes, "Is this for me?"
Artie is such a loser clown, and you feel so bad for him because it's like if he just could be comfortable.
Yeah, with himself, every awkward person. It's like you just want to tell them to be comfortable with themselves. And that brings me to like my other my two favorite lines of the episode were, "You must have been top of your fucking class." And when Tony tells Artie that he's a married man, and Artie does the thing that drunk people do where they like over preface the statements they're going to make. And he goes,
"Yeah,
can I tell you something? She's a cunt."
Yeah,
that's
a good line.
There's one thing that happens before this that I just really love is there's this scene where they're all in the hospital.
Oh yeah,
they're and I just want to bring this up.
Yeah,
because there's one part of this scene that is incredible to me. Paulie brings a Whitman sampler. The guy's in a fucking coma. And he brags to everybody. He's like, "I brought a Whitman sampler."
Oh, yeah. And what
also,
I love.
Yeah, it's like a great Ralphie scene, too, because Ralphie is like clearly being an asshole, but like if you squint through Ralphie's eyes, he's like, hey, I'm just trying to bring some levity to the situation. And
Vince,
you're like,
Vince,
all right,
Vince,
okay.
Vince, he's a cunt.
No, he's just bringing some levity to the situation. It's okay. He was to be fair, he wasn't that smart to begin with.
Yeah, no, it was a good joke, and also like, you know, you credit where credit is due. It was a perfectly fine joke.
Yeah.
Maybe not the right moment for it.
No,
but
they
again,
just they did that thing where like you tell a joke, and if people laugh, it's good. But if they like act like it's bad, then it suddenly becomes bad, and it's like, no, the joke wasn't bad. It's your reaction to the joke made it weird.
And Ralphie's greatest strength is his timing or lack thereof.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's a question. The question is he trying to, does he have bad timing? You know, and
habitual,
he's just trying to add
stepper.
A little levity, or is he knows, I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He likes to push buttons.
Yeah.
So he knows no
stepper,
one's going to like this joke.
Yeah,
exactly. Habitual fucking line stepper. Ralphie's whole thing throughout the entire arc of Ralphie is to step on every fucking toe he can.
Yeah.
And it's not because of anything else, but he feels underappreciated.
He feels underappreciated. He's disrespected. I don't get no respect. You know, that's
he got passed over for Gigi.
I was passed over. That's Godfather 2. I know a thing or two about movies. What I also love about the Whitman sampler is that as soon as Tony and Polly leave, all of the guys wet their beaks.
Yeah,
and they all just start eating the chocolates, which is the most mafia shit ever.
Well,
he's not gonna eat it.
It also goes back to the reason that Italians and Jews always are hanging out and like each other, because I feel like
in both cases
our natural response to tragedy is to like overfeed people for whatever reason.
Yeah.
If you go to
sure.
any like Italian or Jewish funeral, there's always so much fucking food there because we don't know how to respond to sadness other than to like make too much food for whatever reason.
Yeah. You got to eat your feelings. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
So in that very scene, that's where Tony and Gigi talk about the fact that Bobby Bacala Sr. Is going to be, is that when they talk about? Oh, no. Tony basically tasks Gigi with the task of getting revenge and killing Mustang Sally.
That's interesting because all he says is, can you get him in line? He doesn't necessarily say, he doesn't give a whack
order.
Bro,
it's the mafia.
Yeah.
It's the mafia.
Yeah. I mean, they're in, they're in a hospital.
Yeah.
They've already had issues with Uncle Junior in medical facilities.
Yes.
And Tony has also kind of come to learn to say things in ways.
Yeah, he's being careful.
So,
yeah.
You know, get him in line. And remember, Gigi says, with extreme prejudice.
Yeah. With extreme prejudice. Exactly.
Which is indicative of what they're. And so it's amazing to me that they're in a room with a man in a coma and they're planning the death of another man.
I mean, that's what they do.
Well, this is funny. This is a funny storyline because I feel like this is the idealized vision of the mafia. It's like, oh, they're not bad. They're like they're helping to keep order in the neighborhood. Like I feel like someone who like really is into the mafia would see that. It's kind of the same thing that the KKK tries to do. It's like, oh no, we just if some guy is like beating his wife, we go in there and we straighten him out. And this is the kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, this guy clearly has gone too far, and we can't go to the cops, so we gotta handle this within the community.
I mean,
that's what the mafia is.
He threw a guy off the balcony at the Meadowlands.
Too much mustard or some shit.
Too many onions.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Obviously,
which is bullshit.
You know,
onions are. But you cannot have too many onions on a hot dog, so that's bullshit.
But yeah, I like onions.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, the mafia is just a bunch of like sweaty, overweight Batman, just trying to get justice when justice has not been served.
It's Fat Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They come across a perfect opportunity to do so after I guess it's Carmela's uncle dies.
Yeah.
Can I ask
a question about Gigi? Do you think Gigi is like the most stereotypical mafia guy in the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
But the fact that he comes from New England, like he's from Boston, is also like a big, big thing too.
Is Gigi from Boston? Do they make that explicit?
Remember, he kills Patsy's brother.
Yeah,
and he comes back from Boston, I think, and he says, "How was it back there?"
Yeah,
and
he's like, "That's right."
Like something with clams.
See, this is why we have certified Sopranos experts on our podcast.
Yeah.
Someone's got to, we can't even remember the names of the characters. Like, we forgot Svetlana's name for a whole ass episode. We're like, the one-legged lady.
Well, because it's they gave her, like, the most stereotypical Russian name. Yeah. So it's hard to remember. It's like, wait, is it Anastasia or Masha or Svetlana, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it was one of the three. But yeah, then we're introduced to Bobby Bacala Sr. At the funeral for Febby.
Which can we talk about how they are so lousy with incredible actors on the show? Like the entire scene between Artie Bucco and Christopher. Like every time there's a Michael Imperioli scene, I'm like, God damn, is he actually like the fucking best actor on the show? But then you get like a Carmela scene or a Tony scene, or even Artie is so, like, they're all so good.
Yeah, it is rare to have a show where all of the actors, not just the main characters, but all of them, I would say the majority of them are incredible and always will have a few episodes where you're just like, are they the best actor on the show?
And then Burt Young comes in, he gets one episode and he like, you're like, God damn, I can't believe they're going to throw away someone who's this perfect of a Sopranos actor.
But it was memorable.
It was incredible.
And that's the great thing about like him is, you know, Bobby Sr., is that they put him in there in that particular role so that you remembered that he was a constant. They did that like super intentionally.
Yeah, I think so too.
To cement Bobby. I think that what they did was they needed to give Bobby, because they wanted, I think, this is just my own fucking theory.
Uh-huh.
They did the Bobby Sr. thing because they needed to give more weight to the Bobby Jr. character. Yeah. And by giving him a backstory that goes beyond just the little bullshit that we've heard, the fat guy from the season two, it made his character a lot more like part of the series, especially once he's with Janice.
Right.
And so I think that you needed to like create more connection, and so saying Bobby Senior worked a lot for Junior was a big part of that, like that was mentioned the episode,
and Bobby is so such like this henpecked personality that you kind of get the sense that he has a type A kind of father, and then they put this guy in there and it's perfect. It makes complete sense in every way.
Yeah, and I do think that Bobby's the most emotionally mature out of all of them, and it's hard to write an emotionally mature gangster because you're just like, you want him to be.
He is. He's kind of the real big pussy.
He really is. Yeah.
No gumars.
Yeah. No gumars. The dude has never even murdered someone before. Like
And when he does, you see the kind of like how hard it is on him. And it's not until season six.
He really, you can tell that like he was definitely just kind of born into it, and it's nice seeing a little bit of origin story. And in terms of Burt Young, I think to me he has one of the most memorable Sopranos hitman scenes of the entire series, just like him coughing himself to death while trying to murder his idiot godson.
Well,
and listening to what he is in the car. So him like, so fucking jazzed.
Yeah.
He just shot this fucking moron.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, he's so psyched up. And I think that's the reason why he said like, Junior, I want to do it.
Yeah.
That was the whole point, is that he knew he was so close to death that these were the things that when he was alive, he was so good at.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, what they were trying to say. And that's why it gave a little bit more understanding to the Bobby Jr.
Yeah,
character.
For sure.
I
have a clip from him and his scene with Mustang Sally. Yeah.
The old man?
I don't know. What's he look like?
Like an old fucking man. He's all coughing.
Shit. You should do yourself a favor. Quit while you're young.
You're gonna die from something, Boppy.
Hey, fuck asshole. Take the shit out of here.
All right. I'm sorry.
Let me talk to my uncle.
Who's this little spick?
Guy I know. He fucks the lady whose house it is. I'm sorry.
Hey, I know line. What that's like.
Such a good line. He fucks the lady. He fucks the lady whose house it is. So good. Yeah,
it's like it's like the default scumbag line too. It's gonna be on his tombstone. I fucked the lady whose house it was.
And the implication. The implication that the house is on Staten Island for me makes it even fucking better. I just I love how shitty they were supposed to make everybody a part of the scene. But yeah. The fact that Mustang Sally runs to Staten Island to go hang out with his friend that just happens to be in a house that he's fucking the lady who owns it.
Yeah.
That's how it all comes together. And he calls his dying uncle to get him a fucking pass.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the mafia from murdering him.
I was wrong. Take it easy. I got your pass. Thank you. Thank you so fucking much. Tell Tony it will never happen again, I swear. Or if it does, I'll at least yell 4 next time, huh? I'm sorry. I shouldn't make jokes.
Give me a glass of water.
Maybe I should send him something. Some flowers or some shit.
Oh, what the fuck?
Hey, a fucking grief for you. Come on. Anyone spot me wrong?
No, Mr. Bigelow, please, no more. That's professional acting coughing.
That coughing is so intense.
Also, I love the line read of "You fucking greaseball, ya!
You fucking greaseball." He calls him a greaseball, and I gotta say, there's some internalized, anti-Italian American stuff going on there, because he's just throwing out the same things that were said to him when he was a kid. You know, it's the cycle of racism. You know, just because the guy's Puerto Rican.
He's probably going to yell, "You're busted. You're not a virgin anymore." Or something like that. I don't know. It's his last moments.
I felt like Mustang Sally was really bad and not getting whacked. And he should have been able to turn that around. But it's all worth it for just Bobby Sr.'s entire post-whacking scene where he's in the car just grooving out to the music and taking the cigarette like it's the the best sex he's ever had. So good.
And it's he's listening to what is that song, that golden haired surprise song. What is that song? I've heard it, I know it, but I don't know who sings it or what it's called. It's just like one of those oldies.
It is Sister Golden Hair by America.
Just a perfect song
in a
for him
Chevy Lumina.
Yeah. Just covered in blood.
There's two lines that Junior throws in the whole negotiations. There's moments where Junior goes, "Stop speaking in anagrams." Is a fucking classic line.
Yeah, that's a malapropism, isn't it?
I've
never heard someone say "speak in anagrams."
It sort of is.
Speak in riddles. I've never heard. Sure. I've heard of speaking in riddles. Yeah, but anagrams seems made up.
Sure.
So there's two moments. So there's the first scene where he's explaining to him, and then the second scene where he's telling Bobby. He has to do it. And he's like, "Look, Junior, he's retired. He's a sick man." And he goes, "What is this? What, in the Navy?" And so that's just a classic Junior. Teddy Roosevelt once gave a speech with a bullet in his chest. So many classic angry Junior because he's angry about something else moments.
But best thing about it is the fact that you're wondering why is this like so upsetting to Junior? And then mm-hmm. he admits in the scene in the hospital with Tony, what you think is the twist. And the twist is, I have cancer. I have stomach cancer. And you assume, so that's everything. That's why, you know, he's been acting like this and whatnot. But the real reason.
We talked about it. We talked about this real quick before the episode. And just, I felt like the whole, if you take this whole episode in a nutshell, mm-hmm. this whole episode is about Junior's cancer. Everything is about Junior's cancer in some way or another.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like this episode should be called the Big C mm-hmm. Commitment.
The Big Casino.
The Big Casino is also good. But what I like about the scene where he's talking to Tony and telling him I have cancer, you realize the actual reason that he's freaking out isn't just that he has cancer. It's that he has cancer and Burt Young's character was supposed to die of cancer mm-hmm. because he believes so fully in the rule of threes. That he's just like, he's like, now he's dead in a car accident and I'm definitely next. It doesn't matter what, you know, how good of a doctor Tony gets me or anything.
He asks Bobby, did they say what the cause of death was? Was it the metastasis or was it because of the car accident?
Yeah, and that's why he cares. It's literally just the rule of threes. It all comes back to the fact that these are very superstitious people.
Yeah. I also love that, the entire drama is like Bobby and Junior are sort of mad that Tony would send this old man off to do a hit. And then like the worst thing that could happen in their minds happens. But in reality, because we the audience got to witness the hit, like in reality, Tony gave this guy like the best going away death present
that he possibly could have given him. He's the one who's doing the right thing. Everyone else, like Bobby's just concerned because he doesn't want him to die. Well, guess what, Bobby? This guy is on his last leg. Junior doesn't want him to do the hit because he wants him to die of cancer.
and for Tony, he has to let this happen because he can't let anybody undercut Gigi.
Yeah.
He says, I'm not going to take Gigi's balls away. That was a big part of why once Gigi said, old man Bacala's got to do this.
Right, yeah. And he's allowing him... And he doesn't want fucking Johnny Sack stepping in or Ralph Cifaretto mm-hmm. stepping in, who both
assert their fucking place.
And you gotta appreciate Tony's like management skills. Like he's really good at like kind of sticking to his guns and standing up for his troops. You gotta hats off to him.
You know, my boss is super, super fucking good to me because my boss will defend me to the fucking hilt. And that's the way I looked at this particular situation. Just Tony was being a good boss. His subordinate said, this is the plan. He said, I certify that plan. Go with it.
Yeah.
And then fucking Ralphie and fucking Johnny Sack are rubbing their dicks in the situation.
That's what they do. They're dick rubbers. Yeah.
Exactly.
So now we got... finally to the to my favorite storyline of the episode. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but Artie Bucco's midlife crisis is the funniest shit of this episode. It's like watching him freak out about the fact that Adriana is not going to be the hostess anymore, and then simultaneously trying to convince his wife to go into business with Tony is
product brand names that begin with the letter V.
I have a clip of that.
It's a turnoff. Vaseline.
Fuck the vegetables. We have a chance to have our own company, our own line of products.
Then why is it called Satriel's?
The pork store has a customer base. Name recognition.
Vesuvio doesn't. Your grandfather opened up in the 30s, Arthur.
Tony talked to this marketing research guy. Product brandings beginning with the letter V make people think of vagina. It's a turnoff.
What did you just say?
Vaseline, etc. The whole thing is. Can't you see the opportunities here?
Yes, to be a front for a mobster.
Jesus Christ already.
Oh, Artie, what are you going to learn, huh? Be happy in thine own self.
I kind of, you know, I got to side. I feel like I side with Artie in this situation because, first of all, She's talking about the name recognition of Vesuvio, which is like the most cliche Italian restaurant name outside of maybe like Mezzaluna or something.
Also, like, it's a place like in North Jersey.
Right.
I mean, both places are just random fucking places. Satriel's, it's a fucking meat market.
Yeah, you might Vesuvio. As well just name it like Ristorante Italiano.
Yeah, look, if you show me two sauces and one's named Satriel's and the other is Vesuvio, I'm buying Satriel's. I think he's right.
Yeah, no, it's a better name. Also, V does make me think of vagina. And the problem is that for me, that's a good thing. Yeah. But in Italian, in Italian-American culture, they don't eat pussy. Yeah. So they're like... Yeah, We can't name it after pussy.
That's a season or two ago.
I don't want to be eating pussy like some kind of fag.
Yeah, you heard about that homo that went down in that broad. Holy fuck.
I hear they're in fucking love now. But I loved watching him just slowly kind of like piece by piece build his midlife crisis. Like, first it's like, you know, getting into a fight with Chrissy over aid. Then it's like, I'm gonna go into business with the mafia. And then it's like, I'm gonna get an ear piercing. And it all culminates with just the saddest fucking, and like the saddest scene where he and aid have a friend zone dinner date. And it reminded me a lot of well, there's an old internet video. It was my favorite internet video of all time. It was at the beginnings of me searching for funny videos. It's a guy named John Dacre. John Dacre is some guy who went on public access TV somewhere in the middle of the country and attempted to sing "That's Amore." But he forgot all of the lyrics to "That's Amore," and I needed to reimagine this dinner date with John Dacre singing in the background.
Is that an earring? Your ear, I never noticed before.
I've had this for years. I don't wear it all the time. It's Chris, tell you, we had a little run-in.
He's just jealous.
Of what? We're friends.
Well, you know how he is.
Hey, did I tell you I'm gonna go into business with Tony?
What? Like a restaurant?
Satriali Foods. Probably gonna change the name to Vesuvio. Oh, you change your mind about the marriage thing? There's always room on my staff for a bright, sexy vice president. You sure you're ready?
Yeah, I'm sure. You know where the ladies' room is?
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's behind the bar.
No,
no. Cringe! That's amore.
It is incredibly hard to watch. It's like the really, really awkward parts of certain episodes of like Curb Your Enthusiasm or like Nathan for You, where you just can't, you have to look away from the TV because you're just so embarrassed for the person. It's like, oh my God, just watching Artie doing his best to hit on her, but without dropping the whole pretense of, oh, you and I are friends. We're always going to be friends. Just, it embarrassed me.
You know, he could have hair like Casey Kasem and it wouldn't really make a difference.
Yeah.
It's, you know what, I got to be real. You know, I'm 41, probably.
You look great. You look great. I'll let you know that.
I appreciate that. Good probably skin. Thank you. Probably around the same age Artie is. I would say about the same age Artie is supposed to be in this area. You know, maybe late 30s, early 40s. And a lot of guys who go through this whole, like, I'm married really, and I've been married a really long time. I'm not miserable in my fucking marriage. But I think that one of the things you start to see that's really a part of the Charmaine Artie thing is that Artie doesn't feel appreciated by Charmaine.
Yeah.
It is an entirely As I said from the beginning, he doesn't feel appreciated, and that's another big part of this episode.
Yeah,
is that Artie feels that because this really beautiful woman, this young person, loves to do her job well, makes him feel appreciated.
Yeah,
she does these things, and then eventually, when it gets taken away from him by someone else, he feels he's been wronged, and then when Charmaine can even possibly take the idea of him trying to better himself allegedly by going through Tony, he sees Adriana as this like doorway to a better life after he basically fucking ends his marriage in the middle of dinner service.
Yeah, and it does it because of the fact that he is looking to do it. It's like one of those things where it's like I've definitely been in like relationships where I was uncertain of it and had a freak out and whatnot and like found a reason to fight. And like you could tell the moment that he said, "What are you going to do? Divorce me?" to her.
This marriage is over. Yeah, Arthur.
It was like you could tell that it was something like, "Oh boy," he couldn't take the words back fast enough. But then as soon as she says this marriage is over.
That's the hard part about being married, man. That like you have to live through the moments where you recognize like if you say a thing. There's no going back.
Exactly.
And Artie makes a point of he says that thing, and Charmaine doesn't fucking bluff.
Yeah, she because Charmaine She sees right through the bullshit. She's like, I know exactly what you're trying to do. You want me to say I'm divorcing you? Well, fuck you. I'm divorcing you. And he's just like, well, guess I better go get an ear piercing and a reservation at a better restaurant because I'm fucking this young lady tonight. And of course he doesn't. She runs away. And it's just like another tale of like Artie's complete ineptitude when it comes to women. And his weird bravery, when it comes to overstepping, like boundaries with the mafia. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's because he knows he's Tony's best friend that he takes multiple liberties throughout the series.
He pulls a fucking rifle on Tony.
He fucking like, you know, is openly expressing his love for Chrissy's fiance. Later, he gets into a fight with Benny. And it's like, and then he takes money from Tony. And when he loses it all, he's like crying and shit. It's like, oh, boy. Anyways, but that's later. I just loved the Artie portion of the episode. Now, let's end this with just real quick. I'm going to say my favorite scene. Vince, what was your favorite scene, Vince?
I mentioned them both. It was, I liked the, "You must have been top of your fucking class" line.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I tell you something? She's a cunt. Because just,
yeah.
Partly, I feel like they really nailed the way drunk people talk, and also just Artie's sadness. I love it.
And yeah, I think my favorite is kind of like yours. It's not the full scene, but it's just a moment. It's AJ outside of the funeral, just talking about
my friends blah blah had cancer.
Yeah, I have a clip from that.
You know Greg Diuto? His grandfather died of cancer. They froze his head till they find a cure.
Mary, Carmella.
I'm going to check out the hearse.
Don't get lost, AJ.
such an AJ moment, though, right? It's
just so perfect because it's like for a second there, he's just like, oh, he's relating to you on an adult and human level. But it really was just like an entrance point to talk about someone whose head was frozen. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as like he senses like other boring shit going on, he's like, "I'm going to go check out the hearse." This dude, I mean, the fact that they didn't make him full goth is almost a shame. I mean, I'm glad they did with Vito's kid later, but there's just something about AJ where he's such a little dumb guy, and he fills my heart with joy. I love him. It's just AJ stays being AJ.
That's right. It's always on brand.
Always on brand. Well, all in all, great episode of The Sopranos. Solid B+. Definitely. I thought it was wonderful.
Super solid B+.
Yeah.
I have one request from you.
Oh yeah? What's up?
Before we kind of finish up, I sent you a link in the chat.
Oh, okay.
There's a little song that is near and dear to my heart. And I'd really love it if you would just, before we kind of wrap this up in a bow,
yeah,
for me. Uh-huh. To give me this.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Go, yeah. I don't want to do your dirty work no more.
I really want to say that y'all helped me do some dirty work a little bit on this episode. I really enjoyed chilling with you. This is literally one of my favorite episodes of The Sopranos.
Oh, nice.
So I was really psyched when you asked me to like come on here and do this.
Thank you so much for coming on, Jay Gordon. Where can people find you online?
Too much at Jay Destro on Twitter. Yeah. I like to send a shout out to the rest of like the weird like Sopranos Twitter people, like
yeah,
ambassador fucking weirdo John Bolton and like Uncle Doomer and fucking and the King time immemorial. That dude is great. He's doing like really cool things with the Sopranos Con stuff.
Oh, nice.
The Sopranos.
As soon as COVID is over, I can't wait to go to Sopranos Con, man.
Yeah, I had those plans, especially because, you know, I could hit, you know, Atlantic City on a train and fuck it up with like the dude who played Furio. You know, he could paint me some shit. I'll see if he wants to do a J with me. It'll be cool. Nice. Or maybe like the Johnny Sack dude can like complain about like the Democrats to me.
Oh, that would be so sick. Someday. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Frogcast@gmail.com for all of your questions, comments, concerns. You know, let us know if there's anything we missed in any of these episodes. Patreon.com/Frogcast. That's where we do bonus episodes of our other podcast. And you know what? If you're a big fan of this one and you're like, hey, it's free, this is great, you consider donating to our Patreon, because you know what? We do this one for absolutely free. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
I don't want to suck my daddy's dick.
Daddy's dick.
No,
oh,
mom.
Yeah.
You put that in my head whenever I hear it. Sorry, it's 415.
I'm a fool to suck my daddy's dick. Oh, yeah. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, don't look stop like believing.
And don't look like a Puerto Rican whore.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.